This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. Couple of things are different this week. One, you may notice a different sound in the car. That's because I'm driving my dad's car, which is kind of a boat. It's a Lincoln Continental 1998. Lincoln Continental. It's a huge thing. And I'm going to be driving it for, you know, the next, oh, I don't know, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months. We'll see how this goes. The young lady who lives with us, her engine blew up on her car. So that's not so good. So she's driving my car, my little Prism. She's driving my car for the next 3 months because they're doing the Financial Peace University thing at the church. They're running a bunch of sessions at that, trying to kind of help people, you know, get their finances in order, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And she's taking that, which is good. And so when her car blew up, you know, we talked and I said, look, let's just do this for the next 3 months. I'll drive my dad's car. You can drive my car and we'll just do this and just put the car thing on hold, on hiatus until you can get through the Financial Peace University. And then once you get through that, then you can kind of develop a plan, see what you want to do, and then we can talk some more and we can, you know, do whatever needs to come next. So I'm going to be driving my dad's car for the next 3 months, which is good because it needs to be driven. It is a 1998 Lincoln Continental. It is red. And it's got 71,500 miles on it. So, I mean, it's, you know, it still runs really good. The other exciting thing about today is it dropped. The temperature dropped. I don't know if it ever hit 60 today, but it was in the high 50s. It was mid 50s. According to my little watch, the high for today, 54, the low 14. So what happened is we got going this morning. Everything's warm. It's kind of not bad. You know, it's lovely. We're good. Man, then this afternoon, temperature just started dropping. And so it went from like 50-something at noon to where I actually, when I got out of headquarters, it was 30, I think, somewhere in 30. So it was quite the deal. So it's a little cold right now. And in fact, it's misting and there's a little bit of ice forming. So it's time to go home. I would have been going home sooner. I had a breakfast with a friend this morning. He's from California. And unfortunately, he's still on California time, so we missed our breakfast, so we had dinner instead, and so that has put me a little later, which is going to be interesting, because it's late enough now that it's dark. This is going to be interesting to see if I can get that done. Before I do that, though, all was well at work. Had a little hiccup this week, but I'll actually talk about that a little later as part of this podcast. And it was one of those things that looked like there was the potential that it was going to turn into something that was, you know, worse. But as it all turned out, it turned out fine. So that's good. But aside from that, just been, you know, setting things up, knocking them down. I think we're closed for the year now. That all went fine. And so now there's a bunch of start of year stuff that we'll have to get done. But, you know, step at a time. We're just keep moving forward. And so far, all is well there. I'm working on book 8. This was the first week of the second sprint. So I'm up around 87,000 words. I'm actually a little bit behind this week, but you know, the first week you're kind of grinding into it. So I think I'm about 750 words down for the week, but I should be able to get 500 words down tonight, which is what I need. And then beyond that, I've got Friday and Saturday, and so I should be able to get caught back up and get my 10,000 words in for the week. And then, of course, I've got Monday off because it's Martin Luther King Day. And so that will then push me ahead a little bit. So I think all is going to be fine there. Just a matter of getting it written at this point, finishing up book 8, and closing the first opus. Whoop, whoop. First 8 books. And only 2 more opuses to go, 8 books apiece. So so that's all fine and well. Today, I'd seen a TED Talk. And I've got several things lined up to talk about here. But I saw a TED Talk, and I thought, you know, I haven't done anything kind of on that for a while. And it's always fascinating to me whenever I see or hear someone talking about principles of flesh and spirit, but they kind of use other terminology. And it's always interesting when I see that in a secular context, and I'm always interested in hearing how they describe these things. And I actually saw there was a TED Talk, and the name of the TED Talk was, let's see if I can turn on a light here without blinding myself. The name of the TED Talk was... That's not too bad. Beautiful Minds Are Free from Fear. Robert Grant was this guy's name. Good speaker. He's been the head of sales departments and sales divisions and things like that. So, you know, I mean, he's used to being in front of people and he's used to doing presentations. And he did a very good job. And he was talking about the fact that at several points during his life, there is this battle that you do with fear. He was recounting one story where his wife was pregnant and he had to go on a business trip on the day she was due, but the doctors had said that, well, she's probably not going to come and she's on that day. And so, and he had told her, you know, first babies, you never give birth on the day you're due, and blah, blah, blah. So he said, I went on this trip with my boss, and he said, we're at a bar that evening, and we're in the middle of a negotiation for bonuses and salaries and stuff, and he said, I'm sitting there, my phone rings, and it's my wife, and I pick it up, and she says, my water just broke, and he said, you know, it's 4 hours for me to get back there by car, he said, I know, or over 4 hours, something, anyways. He said, I knew I wasn't going to make it back in time. And he said, but I also knew that my boss had a plane. So he said, I described the situation to him. He said, you know, go pack your stuff up. He said he had this Austrian accent, and I won't do it. Right? He says, go pack your stuff up and meet me down in 10 minutes. And so he said, he said, I raced up. He said, I'm packing, throwing stuff in the suitcase. I get down there. He didn't actually get down there until 20 minutes. He said, but then we got out and we got in the plane and he's telling me to check all this stuff in the plane and I have no idea how to do any of this stuff. And he said, people who know me, when I get under a lot of stress, he said, my blood pressure actually goes down. He said, it goes down and he said, I get sleepy. He said, in businesses that I've worked in, when we're really under the crunch, he said, my people in the past have bought me a pillow because they know that I'll just go to sleep. So he said, I go to sleep in the plane. And he said, I wake up and he said, instead of the instrument panel being completely lit, he said, it's completely black. And he said, Robert, he said that my boss, he goes, Robert, can you see the coastline? And he said, I looked out and he said, no, I can't. see the coastline. Robert, can you see the coastline? No. No, I can't. Well, to add to the drama of the current moment, we have lost all instrumentation. And he said, you know, the guy, he didn't say this, but the guy is just as calm as could be. Everything's fine. He said eventually they got in touch with, they were able to get in contact with, like, the Sydney airport. And they had actually were out over the ocean at that point. Apparently this was in Australia. And they guided him back in, got him landed. He got there to the hospital just as his daughter's head was crowning. Just, he said, I came in the room and everybody said, he made it. And he said, my daughter's head is crowning. I'm there for the birth. He said, I'm holding her. He said, but even as I'm holding her, all of a sudden, this fear comes over me. Am I going to be a good father? Am I going to be able to teach her well? Is she going to succeed in life? All this kind of, this fear overcame. He said, even in that wonderful moment. And he was talking about fear and how it dogs our lives. And, of course, in my terminology, that's flesh. But for him, it's just fear. And he was talking about how that hounds our lives and how it can take away from the quality of our lives. And so his mechanisms for dealing with this, he had a nice quote from Alexander the Great. He said, Alexander the Great once said, man's immortality is not living forever. It's living every moment free from fear is what makes a man immortal. And so, you know, that's an interesting thing. So, and he talked about how our attitudes of competition, our attitudes of me having to succeed can birth that fear, which again, I would call that flesh. But he quoted an interesting study at Harvard that said they asked these students who were students in finance, I believe, who supposedly understood finances. And they said, you've got two choices. When you graduate, would you rather make $160,000 a year, knowing that the rest of your class was making $20,000 a year less? Or would you rather make $200,000 a year, knowing that the rest of your class was making $220,000? And he said 87% of the graduates said they would rather make $160,000 a year. And he said these are students who supposedly understand finances, that they could be making $40,000 more a year, but it wouldn't be as meaningful to them as making more than everybody else. And he said that kind of attitude, that kind of striving, that kind of need to win, and what will happen if I don't make more than anybody else, he said, you know, that robs us. And I'm slowing down here because it's hard to tell whether the road is actually slick or whether there's just a few ice crystals forming. I think we're going to be okay. Getting on to my gravel drive here. Ka-chunk, 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 ka-chunk. Anyway, so there was some interesting things there. So then he started talking about, okay, how do you deal with fear from his perspective? And what do you do in these things? And he said the first thing that he found was that gratitude was really important in dealing with fear. And I believe this absolutely. He said, if you can find things to be grateful for in whatever your situation is. And I was actually listening to somebody else today, and they were talking about creative gratitude. They were talking about being in traffic in LA and saying to themselves, you know, it's amazing that there's so many opportunities in LA and the weather's so good. And the reason there's so much traffic is because this is a great place to live. And it's a great place, has lots of opportunities. And so lots of people want to come here, even though the roads can't handle them all. You know, and I'm grateful to be able to live here as well. Finding things to be grateful for is a great antidote towards fear. I'm getting my mail. One moment. Do, 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 do. I was supposed to have a package too. It's not down there. It must be inside. Okay. And he said that the other thing that is something that he uses to control the fear in his life is the remembrance that it is his decision. He said he once had, of what his day is going to look like, he said he once built this business up. Everything was going great. They were going to sell it. He was going to make money. And then the company decided they weren't going to spin off this business. They weren't going to sell it. And so he said all of a sudden, all this work that he had put in it to do all this kind of stuff, they were just going to sell it to somebody else, and he was out. And he said, I was humiliated, and he said, I was discouraged, and all these different things. He said, but I got up the next day, and he said, I said to myself, you know, you have a choice here. You will choose. You will choose how you will respond today, and you will move forward. And, you know, that's a really good way of going about it. For me, again, it's the type of thing that you have all these voices in your life telling you you're a failure, that kind of stuff, and you get to choose whether you listen to those. And then he had a success story of, you know, now it's 18 months later and yada, yada, yada. He had this idea that day when he decided he was going to choose not to be discouraged, not to, you know, be concerned about those things, that he was going to move forward. And out of that, then he started another business and he was able to get some things going. And, you know, that's really good. And I actually had kind of a corollary thing happen this week because about midweek, we came across a problem in the business process management system that we were using. And there was a bug, and it had the potential to have ramifications, wide-reaching ramifications. And, you know, I was investigating. I was trying to figure out what was going on. And initially, I had talked to the man I answered to, and I said, okay, I haven't done my research yet, but the worst-case scenario is A, B, C, D, E here on this. And it wasn't that we weren't going to use the tool, but we would have had jumped through more hoops in terms of how we deployed things, what we checked for, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you know, even in the midst of all that, where, of course, the flesh was saying, oh, there's something wrong with this tool. Oh, you picked this tool. Oh, this is going to be bad. You know, there was another side of me that was, no, don't. Just hold on. You don't know what the thing is till you really know what the thing is. So do your research. Figure it out. You know, nail it down. Then make your decisions. And just that process of telling myself that, it really helps. Just slow yourself down. There's no use of just reacting. Figure out where you actually are. And now that we've kind of gotten through all that, as it turns out, we had one view that apparently got corrupted somewhere. And so we're in the process now of trying to figure out, why did that view get corrupted? Why is it doing that? And, you know, we'll get it taken care of and we'll move on. We'll move on to the next thing. But too many times in our lives, we allow those kind of knee-jerk emotional reactions that are always looking towards disaster, that are always looking towards our own greed, looking towards our own lust, all those things that are focusing on things of destruction. Too often we allow them to get out of control, and then we're constantly backtracking. You know, I had a situation this week where, just as an example, and I love my dad. My dad has done amazing things in his life, but he never has gotten to the point where he can get on the front edge of these emotional reactions. He always has to go through them and then apologize afterwards, which he does apologize afterwards. So good for him, you know, that he does that. But, you know, my viewpoint is, well, okay, but instead of saying those things that you know aren't right, why don't you see if you can get on the front side of that? So I had mentioned to him this past week, that I was doing the 5-hour thing where I only ate within a 5-hour period, which means I basically have one meal a day. And he just was, he was not having that. That's not enough food. What if something happens to you? What am I going to do if something happens to you? And I'm like, Pop, Pop, everything's fine. All is well. You know, where's your end? So I get home. He calls me at home. You know, I was meditating on this and I feel like God told me to tell you that you need to. You need to eat 3 meals a day. That's God's way. And you just like, Pop, Pop, all is well. All is well. So I finally talked him down from that because he's afraid. And then, of course, an hour goes by and then my phone rings again. And I pick up my phone and he says, well, I suppose you know what I'm going to tell you. I said, what's that, Pop? You know, I just called to apologize and ask you to forgive me. And I said, Pop, everything's fine. I said, well, I hope you forgive me. I said, of course, Pop, everything is fine. It's fine. But I have talked with him in the past about, well, how do we back up and stop that fear from, like, taking control of us and having us say things we know aren't right? And I think there's some good things here. First of all, you slow yourself down. You talk to yourself. Make yourself really look at things. Gratitude is a great tool as well. But I think it's also very helpful if you realize that all of that rah, you know, in you is actually coming from something that does not love you, that is not concerned about you, and is really seeking your destruction. And if you listen to it, you're just aiding in that destruction. Or you can recognize that, you know what, flesh, you are lying to me. You are lying to me. And these are the lies that you're telling me. Because if you can identify what those lies are that the flesh is telling you, and you can verbalize them, it's amazing how their power just diminishes when you do that. And so this was, it was kind of an interesting talk, and there was other stuff in here, but I can't really see the notes that well. So we're going to wrap it up with that. And it's just fun to watch other people who may be secular, maybe not, who knows with this guy, but watch them deal with this issue of flesh versus spirit and see how they're kind of negotiating that, and to see that, you know, we really are struggling between this idea of flesh and spirit. And the more we land on the spirit side, the better it is for us, because it is life versus destruction. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.